Okay, can we start with the first question? One of the things that I absolutely loved when I was reading a bit about your bio is that you have this insatiable love for books and reading. One of the things that I've been struggling with as a parent is to try to get my children to get off all the devices and to somehow foster in them a love of reading. Do you have any advice for me, or is it a losing battle?
It is hard for books to compete with the much greater stimulus of things online. I mean, and the computers at this point are tuned to maximum limbic and cortical resonance, so it's very difficult for books to compete. I think you gotta probably just have some no devices time. And so your only choice is read a book.
Right. Do you what's your regimen of reading? I mean, are you as voracious today as you were in your earlier days? I mean, do you sort of etch out an hour or two a day? I've got to get in my reading, or how does it work for you?
No, it's really if there's something interesting to read, I'll usually read it at high speed. And I find it actually is helpful to have a book read to you to go to sleep. So, as a way to sort of, take your mind off a million problems at the end of the day and help you go to sleep is just have the book as an audiobook and have it read to you.
And my apologies for apparently causing you nightmares in
Ha!
listening to my book.
I mean, it was The Parasitic Mind. It's a very good book. I recommend it to everyone. In fact, I did recommend it to everyone.
Thank you, yes.
But it is it really does hit the nail on the head with respect to the sort of woke mind virus that is damaging civilization.
When did you first? I mean, so I'll first answer my question and then I'll turn it to you. So I first noticed all of these mind viruses in my academic work when I was trying to introduce, evolutionary psychology and evolutionary biology in the business school so that people can, have a greater explanation of why people do the things that they do. And most of my social science colleagues were so dead set against using biology to explain human phenomena. So that was my original sort of aha moment. We have a problem. When was it for you that you noticed that something was wrong?
Well, I guess if you go back and say, when did you see the first signs? I mean, you could arguably say it was even 20 years ago, but when did it become much more severe? I'd say about 5 years ago. Coming in the climate just before COVID. And in fact, COVID, I think, is part of the degree of panic over COVID. Was exacerbated by this unwillingness to question science or question the accepted view, and simply be spoon-fed things from the government, and also to shut down dissent and shut down any questioning of the narrative.
Right.
So this is because that's really part of possible. Like for any given sort of virus, whereas biological or mental or digital, it has to have defenses, otherwise that virus won't survive. So one of the defenses of the woke mind virus is to shut down any questioning.
Exactly. Well, that's, I mean, it's interesting that you say this because I was recently asked on a show. It was hosted by a British psychiatrist, and he asked me, Elon, what of all your years as an academic, as a behavioral scientist, what has been the singular phenomenon that has surprised you the most about humans? And it's and my answer is going to speak to what we're talking about here. And so I thought about it for a minute, and I thought, okay, well, probably what surprises me the most is people's inability to change their anchored position once it is deeply anchored, despite the fact that I might build you a huge nomological network of cumulative evidence to show you that my position might be vertical. There's no way to sway you. So if I were to turn the question to you, what would be the most surprising thing in all of your, illustrious, career that has surprised you the most about human behavior? Are you there, Elon?
Yeah, sorry about that. I just discovered an another bug in the system. If I try to, if you press the scissors icon and try to clip a portion of the spaces, then it like the app crashes.
Okay. Well, I'm glad to be of service. Hey, Elon, do you want me to repeat my question, or did you get it, or did you disappear?
Actually, yeah. If you could repeat it, we can do another spaces at a time when we clean up these issues. Because what it should be doing right now is it should be switching between us. Like when you speak, it shows you, and when I speak, it shows me. And then it shouldn't be glitching that if I try to use some of the features that then spaces crashes.
So what? So you want us to stop for today, or do you want us to go on?
Well, we can maybe do a short spaces today and a longer one in the future. We'll fix these issues this week.
Okay, perfect. Okay, so the question that I had asked you is, someone asked me what has surprised me the most over my 30 years as an academic, and my answer was the inability of people to change their minds, despite the fact that you might give them, an unassailable tsunami of evidence. They just go, la, 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 I don't want to hear it. What has been, in all of your career, what has been the singular, human phenomenon that has surprised you the most about humans?
Well, there's probably a long list there. In terms of surprising the most, I would share a similar view to you, which is that we're humans, once they take a position, even when presented with an overwhelming amount of evidence that undermines their position, nonetheless hold on to that position. This I find to be astonishing. Because I aspire to change my opinion if presented with new facts, but this turns out to be a very unusual thing. So,
in a sense, I mean, it's disheartening, right? Because you'd like to think that we're all pursuing truth, and certainly academics should be, and yet what I've regrettably found in my career is that academics are some of the biggest ideologues around, right? I mean, as you know, having, read my book, all of these parasitic ideas originated from, the university ecosystem. So yeah. Can we be optimistic that we could turn this thing around, Elon, or are we just screaming in the wind?
Well, I think we have to be optimistic. I agree with, my general philosophy is that it's better to err on the side of being optimistic and wrong than pessimistic and right.
Right.
If you're going to pick one of the two, I mean, you don't want to be irrational about it, but if it's borderline, better to pick on, assume optimistic and wrong. So I think, and I guess if you were to compare present day with how many times people change their mind, it's probably much better than the past, because people are at least exposed to a wide range of information. So there's probably more changing of minds and changing of opinions than ever before in history. It's just nonetheless astonishing how resilient people are in holding on to a wrong opinion. So it's sort of truth versus tribalism, I think.
Indeed, there's a great book that I briefly cite in The Parasitic Mind. It's by two French cognitive psychologists, and what they argued, Elon, is that the human mind did not evolve to seek some objective truth, but rather it evolved to win arguments. So that speaks to your point about tribalism, right? Because here I am in my sort of lofty ivory tower thinking, hey, if I present you with enough information, I could hopefully change your opinion. But the reality is you don't want to listen to me because you just want to be on the winning team.
Yeah. Yeah. A lot of times it's people will hold an opinion because that's what they're, they see themselves as being on a particular team, like in a particular political party or social point of view, and they just regard it as the team winning the argument as opposed to truth winning the argument.
Indeed.
And that seems to be overwhelmingly the case.
Got you. Can we still go on for a while? It seems like the
bugs. Sure.
Okay, let's keep going.
I made the mistake of exploring some rare features, which I guess a lot of people haven't, and I stepped on some landmines. So I will refrain from testing obscure features for a while.
Got you. Okay, so what would be I mean, this question is really stemming from my latest book, where I was talking about, you know, happiness. And the way that I wrote this book, Elon, if you would have asked me 3 years ago after Parasitic Mind, would I ever dare write a book about happiness, I would have never said yes. But a lot of people kept writing to me saying, hey, what's your secret? You always seem to be playful and joking around and, you know, effervescent and so on. What's your secret to life? And so I decided to write a book on it. And in the book, I basically, you know, I'm talking about what are some of the grand goals that shape, you know, when I wake up in the morning and rub my hands together in gleeful anticipation of the day, there are certain things that shape my day to day. What would it be for you? What is it that makes Elon Musk wake up, rub his hands and say, oh boy, I'm excited to be alive?
Gold.
Gold.
Just kidding.
I was thinking of
Scrooge McDuck and going for a swim in the money bin of gold.
I don't get the feeling that
character. They should do a movie on Scrooge McDuck.
I guess I'm
excited by solving problems.
Okay.
So, you know, if there's problems that I think are important and useful, you know, I get excited by the progression of civilization. So if we learn more things, we advance civilization, become more capable, that's cool. I mean, we're, you know, for SpaceX, you know, it's about advancing rocket technology and spacecraft technology and space-based communications. And then for Tesla, it's about advancing sustainable energy, electric vehicles, you know, battery packs that can be paired with solar and wind. So sort of advancing a sustainable energy economy and then also advancing autonomy, enabling the car to drive itself so people do not have to suffer through the tedium of driving their car all the time. And also cars can then have probably 5 times the amount of utilization that they currently do instead of just sitting in parking lots all day. You know, and then there's this Neuralink, which is somewhat esoteric, but long-term trying to improve the data rate between humans and machines so you can have better achieve AI symbiosis. And in the short-term, help people who have brain or spine injuries. And then Boring Company is digging tunnels to alleviate traffic. And then XAI is, you know, trying to make a maximally truth-seeking AI, which I think is extremely important. And, you know, I think a lot of people are like, why do we need such a thing? Surely the other ones will be truth-seeking. I'm like, have you seen Gemini? It's like, it can't produce a picture. People should be quite concerned about stuff, what they see in Gemini and ChatGPT. Like, ChatGPT is better at hiding it, but still. It's kind of good that Google overplayed their hand there with Gemini, where the diversity. I mean, they must have just beaten that AI with a stick so hard, because such that nothing you do can get it to produce a picture of a pope who's a white guy.
Well, did you see? I actually put up a satirical set of memes where I asked it, what does Elon Musk look like? And it gave me Don Lemon. This was before you had an interview with him.
I thought that was a joke.
No, it was a joke. It was a joke.
Oh, okay, it was a joke. Okay, I was like, but it's at this point, I can't tell if it's a parody of reality. Because if he's like, show a picture of George Washington, and George Washington is a black woman, I'm like, what the hell? This is like actual historical figure, you know? It is crazy things like where you say, like, which one is worse, you know, global thermonuclear warfare or misgendering Caitlyn Jenner? And even Caitlyn Jenner says, definitely misgender me. You know, Caitlyn weighed in and said, definitely misgender me.
Right.
That's
obviously
crazy.
Yeah.
But Gemini is like saying, oh, you know, you should not misgender. Nuclear war is better. I'm like, okay, think about that. Now, if this is an all-powerful AI that somehow is capable of manipulating the world in ways that we don't understand and might ultimately be our digital god, you have to be careful what you program into this thing, because it might take the, you know, what seem like sort of silly guffs right now, but it, if it's got that as an sort of an output function, as utility function, it might say, okay, you know what, there's too many whatever white guys in the world, let's kill half of them.
Right.
You know? Right. It's like, it's not just fiction at that point. It's going to be leading to some pretty dangerous and bizarre outcomes. It could actually, like, if it's been taught, like, that misgendering is worse than nuclear war, it may decide that to avoid misgendering, it should start a nuclear war. The surefire way to stop any future misgendering is to kill all humans.
Right. Exactly.
problem solved. No more misgendering.
So out of all of these, so you listed all of these incredible initiatives that you've done. When you first purchased Twitter, I had produced a short clip where I said that, in my view, your purchase of Twitter will go down historically as the most important of all of your great initiatives. Do you feel that was that a right calculation on my part, or was I overstating the case?
Well, you might be right. It's possible that you're right. I mean, I didn't do the purchase because I thought it was a great way to make money, or because, you know, I thought it would improve my quality of living. Because frankly, I knew that I would be, you know, there would be a zillion slings and arrows coming my direction, because the woke mind virus and various other sort of falsities are not going to take it lying down. and I could just end up being killed by some crazy person, you know, that is an effective arm of the mind virus. So, but it really, and I couldn't quite put my finger on it, but it really felt like it was a civilizational danger.
Yeah.
That unless one of the major online platforms broke ranks, then because they're all just in behaving in lockstep, along with the legacy media, just everyone saying the same thing. And so there's like literally, it was just no place to actually get the truth. It was almost impossible. So everything was just getting censored. Like the power of the censorship apparatus was incredible.
Don't I know it? I mean, I always had to, I mean, I'm not someone who really walks on eggshells, but I knew that there were certain things that would get me banned. So for example, at one point, I don't know if you know Matt, do you know Matt Ridley, Elon? Do you know who that is?
I don't think so, but possibly I may have met him, but I don't know.
Matt Ridley is a popular author who is also, he was in the House of Lords in England. And he's an evolutionary biologist by training. And at one point, he came out with a book with a co-author about two years ago, where he was arguing for the lab leak theory for COVID. And his people had reached out to me and said, hey, you know, Matt would love to come on your show and chat about this. And so I responded, and I almost felt ashamed that I was saying this. I said, look, I'm always happy to speak to anyone. I hardly shy away from conversations. But you should know that the minute that we actually put up the chat on YouTube, not only is it going to be taken down, probably my channel is going to be deleted. And so pragmatically speaking, there was no point in us having that conversation. Until today, I feel horrible at the fact that I actually had to go through that calculus. Uh-huh. And luckily, you taking over X no longer causes me to have to make those kinds of machinations. Okay. Are you back, Elon?
Yeah, sorry.
What happened? Well, this has been
certainly helpful as a means. You can hear me now, I assume.
Oh, yeah, I hear you.
Okay, great. I was just walking around the house, and I think it dropped the connection for some reason. This is definitely a reminder that if a connection is dropped, the moment someone rejoins, it should rejoin in the prior status unless they were exited by the host.
Right, yes.
Unless the host kicked them out, they should re-enter in the same status as before.
So in addition to us having a fun conversation, you're getting some technological benefits out of this.
That's correct.
I win.
So, yes. I got to two birds with one stone, or three birds with one stone. Basically get the whole flock.
All right. Should we do a few more questions, and then Hopefully you iron out the kinks, and then we could have a round two whenever you think it's ready, hopefully in the near future.
Yeah, sounds good.
Okay, so next question. I often get asked this, you know, I'm housed in a business school, and so I'm asked things like...
Yeah, that's so strange. Yeah.
the old nature nurture question, you know, is leadership nature or nurture? So obviously you're definitely the top entrepreneur in the world. Do you think much of your entrepreneurial bent is nature or nurture, or how would you answer such a question?
Well, I think if somebody's going to be, you know, at among the world's best in any field, it's going to require both. You know, if you take whether it's like basketball or in any kind of sports or something like that, or academics, then you're really going to require some combination of nature, nurture, and some amount of luck. You know, there's sort of a randomness element to it. I can see the randomness because I've got a twin study among my kids where I've got identical fraternal twins and identical twins.
Right.
And even among the identical twins, which really had obviously the same genetics and the same upbringing, they were living in the same room, literally, and yet they have diverged in interesting ways. And now, admittedly, it didn't, like, not radically different, but, you know, one pursued physics and the other one pursued computer science. So it's not radically different.
Right.
But the single biggest difference, I would say, is one of them decided to be vegetarian when he was about 7 or 8, and one of them didn't. And the difference is about 2 inches in height, and the twin that was not a vegetarian is way bigger.
Right.
So there's like, okay, you know, like quite, it was a really big difference. But anyway, so there's the randomness element, where it just luck or fate or whatever plays perhaps a bigger role than it may seem. But you do need to be born for any particular to excel in any field with a good hand of cards.
Exactly.
And then is that talent nurtured, you know, in through the circumstances of life, and then, you know, some amount of luck is, it has to be there too. I read a lot of sort of the superhero comics when I was a kid, and ultimately, you know, concluded like, what is the best power? The best power is luck.
Right.
You can't beat luck.
Right. But what would be some of the traits that you were born with? That, so, for example, there are some studies, Elon, that show that people who score high on entrepreneurial proclivity tend to have greater basal testosterone, because testosterone correlates with risk-taking. And to the extent that entrepreneurship involves an element of risk-taking, then you could see the link. So what is part of the stew that you were born with that allowed you to be as successful as you are?
So basically, you mustn't just have metaphorically huge balls. You must have actually huge balls. Okay, I think that's what you're saying.
So if you just measure
how big are your balls, physically, will decide how big your balls are metaphorically as well.
Indeed. That's called now the Elon Maxim. But by the way, Elon,
these nuts.
By the way, here's the study. Speaking of testicles, you ready? So you're gonna like this. Get ready.
Yeah.
Fasten your seatbelt. So if you do a correlation between across primates, between the size of the testicles of the males of a species, as a function of their size.
Yeah.
You know what it correlates with? It correlates with female promiscuity in that species. So, for example, so mountain gorillas usually have a polygynous mating system, meaning one dominant male monopolizes sexual access to many females. Well, mountain gorillas, even though they're formidable in size, they actually have very small testicles. On the other hand...
no need to waste anything, yeah.
Exactly. Whereas chimpanzees, Elon, are walking testicles because they're just having sex all the time. And so there is massive opportunity for sperm wars. And so this is the ultimate feminist theory, because it basically argues that the size of the testes of the males of a species are an adaptive response to female sexual behavior in that species. Mic drop, no?
Wow, mic drop. we need a mic drop icon or something like that. We'll add that to the emoticons here.
All right, let me hit you with a couple of more questions. You and I have discussed privately, I'm going to say the acronym and then I'm going to explain it to the people who don't get it. You've stated, I don't know if it was serious or facetiously, that you'd like to start a tits and ass institution.
I think I can explain that. So
go ahead.
So for a while there, I was wondering, well, you know, Massachusetts has MIT, and California has, you know, California Institute of Technology, CIT or Caltech as they call it. But why doesn't Texas have a Texas Institute of Technology? And then it dawned on me, TIT, yes. that's probably the reason. And then a friend of mine suggested adding an S for science, and
that became tits. And then, of course, you put out another tweet where you said, but of course, there will be an advanced social studies faculty.
Yeah, of course, you got to have that. I mean...
Now, are you being facetious about that project, or is this in the works?
Well, you know, I do believe in making jokes come true, because the Boring Company was initially just a joke, where I said I was going to start a company to dig holes, and it's going to be like the Boring Company, like Boeing, but just like the Boeing Company, but the Boring Company, and... its product will be nothing, a hole. It's like, can you look at our product? Our product is the absence of something.
Right. Well, that's like the Seinfeld episode where he's pitching a pilot and the whole point of the show is nothing. So it's the exact same thing.
Yeah.
Okay, so let me ask you this. What one last question. This comes from the latest book on happiness. I argue in the book that the research overwhelmingly demonstrates that the correlation between money and happiness only applies up to an inflection point. So once your basic necessities are met, I think the old study was 75,000. Now we need to increase 75,000 because of Biden's inflation. But do you subscribe to that? So, I mean, Elon Musk, the richest man in the world, is not necessarily happier because outbuy me by $200 billion.
No, definitely not. I think that's more or less correct. In fact, I'd say there's a decrease in happiness that occurs when the fame level exceeds that which is useful. So, like, there's a certain, you know, modicum of fame where you can now get, you know, it's easy to get a reservation at a restaurant.
Right.
That's like the you want that level of fame and not anything beyond it, because then you get to the level of fame where you go to the restaurant and everyone's coming up to your table. And people actually are very nice. They're very nice to me and super good. But I do often get stuck in the "can I have a selfie" infinite loop. and it's and that's my version of hell is the "can I have a selfie" infinite loop. And people are super nice, and I want to do the selfie, but I don't want to be stuck in a "can I have a selfie" infinite loop forever. So there's, you know, that's I'd say you pass in terms of fame, definitely a threshold where things are less fun, and I can't just go to the mall or go to a movie theater easily, and or walk around without, you know, creating a ruckus. So
now, do you when you just move around in your daily life? Forgive me. Please tell me if you can answer this. Do you have to have security around, or is it just that?
Yeah.
Oh, you do, eh?
Well, so here's the thing that happens, which is it's very rare for me to get actually death threats or anything. But I'd say in the last, not related to actually, like, no one's ever said, "Well, I've got this terrible beef against you, and I'm going to kill you because of the following well thought out ideas." but I have had two cases in the last 6 months were of two people who are just unfortunately just very mentally ill, but not subtle. It's not subtle. It's like, and they have come to Austin to try to kill me.
Oh my God.
With guns. So, but like I said, in both cases, that there's no one guy thought I'd put a chip in his head, you know, like a Neuralink chip or something. And I'm like, which I think you got to consider the logic of that. Well, the chip's obviously not working. If I'm putting a chip in to crawl and control him, you know, it's clearly not working. So, or would he like an upgrade?
You know, let's
maybe a software update or something. So, you know, so one guy, they're basically just extreme schizophrenic. And another guy, he's actually reasonably okay when he's on his meds, but he stopped taking his meds. And then it's just total detachment from reality, you know? So,
yeah. So these are paranoid schizophrenics?
Yeah.
Yikes.
Yeah, yeah. Like hardcore. Like not, you know, not like.
Are you, since you mentioned Austin, any regrets of having moved out of beautiful California to Austin, or are you every day happy that you've made that decision?
Austin's a great city. And it's a boom town. It's probably the biggest boom town in America since LA in the 70s. And a ton of interesting people keep moving here. So I have a lot of friends that have moved here from New York and California and other parts of the world. So it's really, I think, it has all the pros and cons of a boom town, you know. So it's a lot of energy, but you know, there's a shortage of houses and resources because lots of people are moving here. So overall, I feel very, very good about Austin, and like I said, there's more interesting people moving here every day. But I think there's obviously a lot to be said for California. But I do feel like California is unfortunately going to go through this phase where the Golden State is going to cook the golden geese.
Right.
So it's sort of not enough to simply make the eggs. They're cooking the geese, and you don't want to be there while the geese cooking is happening.
Yeah.
So I think at some point there will be somewhat of a pushback, but really the state kind of has to encounter financial difficulties before that happens. And this with this hopefully at some point. A reduction in the extreme amount of regulation, the extreme amount of litigation, and the extreme amount of taxation, which are both over the top. All three of those are over the top in California. So, I think if you think about it as a state, you do want to maximize the number of golden eggs that get laid, and you don't want to cook the geese. So I think California's, you know, many countries go through that phase, and California as a state is going to go through that phase. So I just, my preference is not to be there while the geese cooking is happening. But I do visit a lot. And it's a beautiful state with a lot of potential. And I think ultimately, you know, once the geese cooking is done and there's hopefully some reforms done in California, then, you know, I potentially consider being like dual state at that point.
Gotcha. Beautiful. Listen, Eli, I want to be mindful of your time. I could keep you here for another 5 hours. What a delight to speak to you. Thank you so much. And thank you for all of your public support. Although I must say, as soon as I started seeing all of the lovely, you know, tweets that you would put out, I told my wife, watch now the number of haters that are going to come my way because Elon is showing me love. And boy, was I right, right? Because people can't stand the fact that Elon Musk is, you know, granting his imprimatur. So on the one hand, it's been a blessing, but on the other hand, I've actually received death threats because of all of the, you know, the high profile new friends that I have. So thank you so much for your newfound friendship.
Well, you're welcome. One thing I was going to say is that the probability of receiving a death threat is proportionate to the number of people who've heard your name.
Right.
Like a first order approximation, even if you've done really nothing controversial, is that, you know, it's sort of a homicidal maniac is going to, or an aspiring homicidal maniac, and the vast majority are simply threats, nothing more. But an aspiring homicidal maniac is going to target you proportionate to the number of times they hear your name. So now in my case, they've all heard my name. So the more that hear your name, unfortunately, that's how it goes.
Yeah, no, I hear you.
It's a good first order approximation.
Yeah, but I think it was a week or two ago where you just sent me a DM out of the blue saying, and I was cracking up, and I'm just going to mention it. I hope you don't mind. You said something like, how is it that you're surviving in Canada amidst the infestation of woke mind viruses? And I thought, my God, what a cool life I lead that I can just receive out of the blue such a DM from Elon. So thank you for your
concern. Well, I mean, is it crazy it there? Is. Or it's just...
I mean, as I replied to you in the email, Elon, so not only is it full of the woke stuff, you know, because of Trudeau and so on, but Quebec has a singular problem, that is that it's more socialist than the rest of Canada, right? So, forgetting about the woke stuff, Quebec really believes in the ethos that we should all be equal. So, for example, in the universities, you have the unions that are ensuring that we all get paid roughly the same because God forbid that one person might be more productive than another. So there are all sorts of, institutionalized reasons why, my philosophy of life doesn't fit with Quebec. I mean, there are many elements of Quebec that I love. I'll always be grateful to the fact that we were able to escape the Lebanese Civil War and be accepted in Quebec. But if there is a way that I can join the Renaissance of Austin, I'm on that flight tomorrow. So let's keep our fingers crossed.
All right, sounds good.
Yeah.
All right, well, it's a pleasure.
You too. Thank you so much, Elon. And I'll be in touch to hopefully do it again when you can have the video thing set up. Thank you, buddy. Take care. Talk to you soon. Bye.